we're talking about the history of humanity and how we have been influenced, and it's like we deserve to know that, and we deserve the technologies that are being suppressed.
We're being exposed to only so much information. We're not being fully educated. There's a difference.
What percentage of UAP sightings, in your belief, go unreported by our pilots?
I would estimate we're somewhere near 5% reporting, perhaps. 5% reporting.
There isn't
perhaps,
anything, 5%. Then why the push to cover it up? Then why the
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
By then, I had already accepted this new paradigm of there being, as Senator Inouye said, and I'm quoting, there's a secret government with its own Air Force,
its own Navy, its own fundraising mechanism, and the ability to pursue its own ideas of the national interest, free from all checks and balances, and free from the law itself. Free from the law itself.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast. We have created a referendum known as the It Can't Be a Joke Revolution and Initiatives. This is a movement of thought and consciousness. Our mission is to educate and plant the seeds of curiosity surrounding the issues that we deem most critical, with the goal of freeing humanity from the powers that seek to hold us down.
We use this as an opportunity to not only expose the corruption in our country and world, but to discuss the importance of consciousness, self-awareness, and spiritual evolution as we seek to crack the riddles of life and our purpose on this planet.
Melissa?
Kevin?
Let's blast off.
Let's.
It is claimed that alcohol is said to have come from the Arabic term al-kol or al-gal, which translates to soul-eating spirit.
Today's episode is all about alcoholism.
Yes, and this is a subject that we hold near and dear to our heart because we've lived through it. We know the effects that it has on your body, your mind, your spirit, mm-hmm. Everything. We know we're not the only two people that have it.
Yep. And if you don't, you know someone who does, odds are.
It seems everyone knows, has a, you know, maybe someone in their family or a cousin or a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows someone that they care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It affects a lot of people when you talk about alcoholism and addiction.
Yes. And alcoholism, you can substitute that for addiction as well. Anything mm-hmm. that has its claim on your peace of mind, your soul, and your spirit, it all ties into the same mm-hmm. category.
It's like that, kind of that, your inner demons, really, and just kind of taming the beast in a way.
It is. I feel like for me, it's something that for the longest time, for almost 15 years, mm-hmm. is what it was, that I wanted to try to control and master it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always come up with different ways in my head that I could try and what I'll do. And it never worked.
Yeah.
It never worked.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, if you're in the middle of trying to quit or to figure it out, it can be really difficult.
Yeah.
And it's also very difficult for a lot of people because all their friends do it too.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's, you know, it's the main thing at their family events, and they're all, you know, some people, Thanksgiving, Christmas rolls around and it's a big party.
Mm-hmm.
And they may claim that, you know, oh, it's so fun, and they probably do have fun. We've all had fun.
I think there's still a stigma around it because it's really about the stigma of it still being like a moral issue and people not feeling comfortable. People don't want to accept it if they have an issue, but they also don't even want to look at it. They don't want to feel the shame and guilt and stuff. And I think that's probably the biggest issue. And I've definitely been judged before, and rightfully so, for, you know, my own issues and behavior.
Yes.
So I get it, but it is still like, I still feel like people judge you in a moral way, and that is fine, but that people just, they don't want to look at it.
Yeah, and it's funny if you tell someone, oh no, you know, I don't drink. A lot of times, you know, the first reactions are, oh, wow. Like, there's different reactions to it. Some people are just like, oh yeah, cool. There has been the reaction, like, you know, if they're going to go drink, if let's just say you meet someone new or whatever at work or just out and, you know, they're planning, they want to go drink and they ask you or whatever, oh no, actually I don't drink. And then they kind of give you that look like, mm-hmm. Are you an alcoholic? And it's funny because, you know, that when that specific scenario are, you know, they're saying that, chances are they probably have their own issue because they're like, well, if we're going out, well, alcohol has to be involved, right? Alcohol is going to be involved, right?
All of us are, and you aren't. You're the odd one out.
Yeah.
I've been in that situation at a bachelorette party, and everyone did. They turned and looked because they wanted, I don't know, I think they were wanting to hear my response.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I've had to skip many bachelor parties as of recently.
Yeah.
And to all my friends, it's nothing to the bachelor party itself. I want to be there. But when it's one of the main things that's going to be going down, I personally just, there's no point in me being there.
Yeah.
If I can be around it, but I don't choose to. I don't seek to. I don't hang out at bars. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to, like, if we go to a sporting event, which is like once a year, you mm-hmm. know, we'll go to a Creighton play in Providence, or we tried to go to a Red Sox game.
We were too late.
We were late parking, and then it's whatever. So we just hung out. But it's not, we're not seeking after the drinks at those games. But I mean, this is talking about, you know, that 15 years that I talked about, like, of course, I at that point I'm seeking out where's the bar here.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know where that is immediately.
Yeah.
Once we walk in, whether it's, you know, at a show or a sporting event, whatever it is, mm-hmm. where's the alcohol?
Yeah.
And that goes for everything, pretty much. Okay, we're going golfing. All right. Well, I'm not going to pay $7 a beer at the golf course. That's insanity. You know, I'm sneaking in a six pack of tall boys. That's going, I don't even need a cooler. I don't care. I'll drink it warm, but mm-hmm. I'm bringing beer. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'll have probably, let's just use the golfing example. We're doing 9 holes. I'll have probably about 3 shooters of Fireball as well in my pocket, ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's nothing, because if you wear a long flowy maxi skirt, you can tape a pint to your leg on the inside.
Oh yeah.
You know,
back in the day in college, I used to be able to sneak in to the Quest Center, CenturyLink Center, whatever it's called, CHI, Med, where Creighton plays and UNO mm-hmm. hockey played there for a long time. I could sneak in a full six pack tall boys, two in my big winter coat, two in my pockets of my pants, and then I'd tie two into my belt and tighten it in my pants. So I'd just walk in, you know, no one would be able to see or know. But, you know, obviously, if I'm sneaking that in, there's going to be a couple little shooters in there for me. And, yeah, it was
a crutch.
Planned my weekends around it. Planned mm-hmm. my any social gathering, mm-hmm. I felt. Mm-hmm. After I started for the first time drinking, I never needed it. I never felt. The thing is, I never needed it, period.
Right.
But after the first time I drank, I felt like, now I need this,
mm-hmm.
especially when I'm around people. Mm-hmm. Now I need this to have fun. Now I need this to ease social anxiety, mm-hmm. to...
And it people explained it to me when I was first getting sober. They're like, you don't like what it does to you. You like what it does for you.
Yeah.
Because you think you need it now to open up to this, to that, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. It's very true.
And it was just, it was a big lie.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something in my head that was, you need this.
Yeah.
We're playing a show.
Right. You know,
played
I know.
Over in my life, probably over 100 shows or reaching that over my lifetime of playing drums and guitar. If we're playing a show for sure, you know.
Yes.
And a lot of times you get free, you know, you'll get free drinks or a couple free drinks. And
oh, yeah. At Espana in Benson, when I played guitar there, I'd get free wine, and it was really good, you know, Spanish wine.
Yeah. So, that's almost like their form of payment. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we're not going to be able to pay you for this show, but you can have some free beers. Okay, well, and at that time, okay, sweet. We can drink for free, and then let's close the bar down.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, make friends with everybody.
Yeah, with the bartenders, everyone. And then, oh, cool, we can hang out at the basement of the bar after it closes down, and then we can go, you know.
Yeah, and that's a lot of, like, the city of Omaha, too. Like, the nightlife, and we have great restaurants there, but it's just, that's a huge part of the culture.
Oh, yeah. Omaha, I believe, it has the most bars per capita. So I remember reading an article once mm-hmm. that voted Omaha the drunkest city in America.
I heard something like that, or like the most bars per capita thing.
And the reason the DUI rate is so high in Omaha is because the public transportation is trash. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're revamping it. We don't live there anymore, but I know that they're going to try to put in a little streetcar, which they used to have back in the early 1900s, and then obviously they got rid of it.
And they've been talking about putting in that streetcar for, I feel like, 10 years now.
Yeah, they have. We'll see if it gets put in. It would be really cool. It'd be sweet if they got to the point that they have, like, a very legit little train system going through the city. I would love that.
It'd be so fun and cute.
But that's the reason that the DUI rate is so high there, is because everyone, it's... Omaha is a city that is very spread out. So it covers a big amount of land. So people would want to drive, and then, you know.
People think, like, oh, yeah, well, DUIs are common there. It's like, it's almost like, well, that's just a common thing that happens to a lot of people. But it's also just, it's terrible.
There's a story that came out of Omaha from like a couple weeks ago to a month ago. And we read this story that a lady, God, it's just so bad and it's so sad. In downtown by, I think it...
10th and Douglas. It's kind of by the Holland Center and like the Jean Leahy Mall, basically.
Yeah. And someone was hammered off their ass. Mm-hmm. And she got in the car with her significant other and her three kids. And if you don't know the area, for our non-Omaha listeners out here and all over the country, we got and all over the world.
Yeah.
All over the world. It's a very slow area in downtown Omaha. You're not driving fast. You're driving 10 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Like 15 tops at 10th and Douglas. You're not going quick.
You're about to pull up to all the cobblestone streets.
Yes. This lady was going over 100 miles per hour and slams into someone that's just parked waiting for the red light to go.
No, he took a left onto like southbound, but she was cruising so fast. She just came on and caught up to him and plowed into the back of him.
And the car exploded.
Yeah. Right?
There's a fire.
He hit a tree and his car started on fire, and so did hers. I think hers started on fire first and it spread to his car. Because the hit had to be so hard.
He's unconscious. He passed away, right?
Yeah.
Sad. I mean, it's so sad.
They burned.
So he passed away. Mm-hmm. She lived.
Mm-hmm.
And
the guy in the front passenger seat
lived.
And at the time, they had an 11-month-old that survived. She had an 18-day-old kid there that didn't survive. 18 days old. I think maybe a 5-year-old and then an 11-month-old. It was one of the, you know.
Did
younger.
All three of them die?
Mm-hmm.
All three of her kids died?
Yes.
So, my God. It's so sad. And it's.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I wanted to bring up this topic. Like, sometimes if you are getting sober, struggling, like, you know, look up facts and things that can inspire me or help me out. And I listened to a TED Talk once from this English neuropsychopharmacologist. His name is Dr. David John Nutt. And he was talking about in the UK how he founded his own drug research program that looks, you know, studies the brain, addiction, and all of everything that goes into it, sleep, etc. And he said in the UK, they rank alcohol the most dangerous drug, and that's because of the self-harm and the negative effects that it has on society. Like, alcohol is right at the top, and then, like, heroin is next, and then crack cocaine.
And isn't it funny that that's what they give us?
Yes, and it's the only thing, like, that's not considered a controlled substance. You know, it's kind of owned by the corporations who distribute it, and people don't think of it like they do heroin. And on that list, psilocybin was ranked the lowest with absolutely no effect, negative consequences on society. And
for those who don't
that know, is still considered a controlled substance, where, you know, alcohol, yeah, you have to be 21, but why aren't, it's not in there.
And psilocybin is mushrooms, for those that don't know. As you know, we despise corruption. We hate corruption. That's the entire Can't Be a Joke mission, is to put an end to it and to expose it. And when we're looking at alcohol and alcoholism, and how we'll go over some stats in a little bit, that's really, just until recently did they start, some states have legalized marijuana and weed, but it's still not legal on a federal level, and people can still get in trouble. You get a ticket, you can go to jail for it, for a plant. They give us alcohol and they promote it all over the place. You'll, every single commercial, there's going to probably be an ad for whatever type of alcohol there is. So boom, it's right there. It's all over the music industry. It's all in movies. Mm-hmm. It's, and in movies, I find it interesting that when someone has a rough day, and they're in the movie or show, whatever, they come home and they've had a really rough day. They sit down at the kitchen table. It's dark. They pour their glass of whiskey. Yeah. And it's conditioning people to, oh, yeah, every time I'm upset or mad or whatever it is, mm-hmm. I need to now go drink, because that's what's conditioned in our brains for what they're constantly showing us on the television.
Yes, that's, and it's a lot of the reality TV shows that are out there, like those Real Housewives shows. Everyone's drinking wine, like Sex in the City, which I watched. I loved that show. But yeah, I was like, you're hanging out with your friends, having a glass of wine. And that's just like such a huge culture now.
It is. Our whole culture revolves around it. Mm-hmm. Oh, is there going to be booze there? Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. Why isn't there going to be booze?
It's at, you know, birthday parties. It's at every sporting event. It's at everything.
Every show.
Every show,
every ceremony,
every holiday. The holidays are coming up, so I know that's hard for people, because it's, you're going to run into it. And, you know, sometimes you do need to stay away from it for a little while to figure out what your boundaries are, and then figure out what you can tolerate, you know?
Yeah.
You can't escape being around it. They sell it at Whole Foods. You can have a glass of wine when you go to your shop.
Let's
the movies.
Let's close down. The zoo is going to close at 6. So we're going to do a special from 7 to 10 for adults. And you can go get your booze on at the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
They blast it everywhere. So it's in your face. It's what people are conditioned to want to do. And then you have drugs like psilocybin, mushrooms, that have no negative effects on society, that can
They have medicinal uses, like curing depression when people, you know, if you can get it in a capsule. I know it's studied a lot more in the UK, but it helps your brain chemistry and it can help you get over certain traumas and open your mind up to basically just kind of like reprogram certain things that are keeping you down.
People use it for spiritual, to pray, to meditate, and you take it in a small dose. But there's a ballot here in Massachusetts to try to legalize. And apparently I was talking to Gina at Fat Daddy's. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Gina and Jamie. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
And Gina was saying that apparently the law that they were trying to pass, it's not really a good one. It modeled Oregon's law, who's having issues with it. With their law, there's loopholes and whatever. I don't know exactly what it is. But what I would like to see is legalize it. It's also one of those things where it's like, it's a plant. It's a mushroom.
Well, they've like also, you know, put their own narrative on it. You know, we talk about the operation, what was that, Mockingbird? and
what the media,
yeah, and the, how they the narrative they've created around it.
Remind people what Operation Mockingbird is.
That's when they learned propaganda in the media after World War II.
The CIA is buying out of the mainstream media to write and present the narrative and the stories that they want so they can control the narrative and control your
they
mind.
Changed the spelling of marijuana with a J to look more Mexican.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
I remember watching a documentary on marijuana once, just like the history and the corruption.
The propaganda behind it, mm-hmm. to scare people and like...
Yeah.
It's a plant. When you smoke it, you're not going out being a psycho.
Well, it has medicinal properties. Like my friend in Nebraska has MS and she has an Indian doctor, or had an Indian doctor. And she said that, you know, that could, it helps reduce inflammation, which is what MS is and what so many health issues are. It's all your body is inflamed from chemicals and toxins and stuff. But that would help, but we, you know, certain states don't even want you to have medical marijuana because of the narrative that's been created around it.
Yeah. And then you'll get these politicians in there, some dude who's just saying, you know, he's up there spouting off why it's bad.
And like Pete Ricketts?
Like Pete Ricketts is who came to my mind. And it's wild that there's these other things that have really no negative effects, but they want, here's the thing, they want people drinking because it makes you sad, depressed, lonely.
It closes your third eye. I mean, they took away the reservations and gave Native Americans casinos and alcohol.
Yes.
There's another good example.
Exactly. It's going to hold you down and keep you inside. It's going to keep you not looking up at the stars and trying to figure out what's going on up in our space, in our skies. It's going to not let you figure out your own internal, whatever you're trying to figure out. It
takes literally you away from your intuition. You can't, because you're just clogged with anxiety or depression. You do it to change your internal state. I found this fun fact. You talk about Mesopotamia a lot. And, you know, just like the Native Americans, civilizations do use alcohol for religious and spiritual purposes. And it goes back thousands of years. Like if you go back to Mesopotamia and look at their archaeological structures, they have wine vessels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but the tradition and the abuse goes back so far.
Yeah. I feel like they've used it as a way to keep humans glued down to not be able to have their own real spiritual awakenings.
Yes.
And that's why they want everyone doing it and promote it. There's liquor stores on every block.
And they're called beer, wine, and spirits.
Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode. If you are enjoying our show and support the It Can't Be a Joke mission, please consider leaving us a review on your streaming platform, following us on X, YouTube, Instagram, and Rumble, and showing your support by purchasing one of the many items we have for sale on our merch shop, which can be found in our link tree on our social media sites.
We're always looking to work with like-minded individuals, so if you're interested in working together or sponsorship opportunities, shoot us a message or email. Thanks again for all of your support.
Now, back to the episode. Why do they call it spirits?
It's the demon spirit.
It's a demon. Mm-hmm. Anyone who has alcoholism, they know it's a demon. Whether they admit it or not, they know it. They think it in their head. And because it's a literal demon, alcoholism takes hold of your brain, your heart, your soul, and it keeps you down. Mm-hmm. And for someone like me, I would try not to do it as much during the work week, because like, my hangovers are so bad.
Yeah.
So then I would still have those days where it's like, okay, yeah, we're doing it. But then it was mainly on the weekend, you know, Friday hits. All right. I'm binging. I was a binge drinker.
Yes.
Where I would try, you know, for the most part, try to get through the main work week. As I said, sometimes I would fall back, but Friday hits. All right. Friday, we're going. It's finally here. Mm-hmm. And I would just go pound.
Bust out the vino.
What's vino?
Wine.
That's
Trader Joe's always had really good cheaper wine. And you could go get a few bottles. And then it's like, yeah, Friday at 5, it's like, okay, I'm going to get my groceries, put some music on. But it's just like that idea of I need it for when I cook and when I do this and for when I do that.
Exactly.
Like, why did I think that?
That you need it for all these different things and that it's going to do anything for you. Friday hits, I'm going very hard, usually staying up till 3 or 4, or let's just say till I pass out.
Yeah.
And Saturday, wake up, I feel like absolute shit. But luckily it's Saturday. I got one more day. Sunday's, you know, the next buffer. So a lot of times then I would just kind of start early on a Saturday because my hangover was bad. My head hurt. My body hurt. For people that don't know, alcoholism, your body gets used to having it in your system. So when it doesn't, you start to go through withdrawals. That's what your hangover is. So Saturday, all right, going to go through that day, kind of binge it through. And then Sunday would hit and I would hope to not do it Sunday so I could be ready and feel good for work on Monday, Tuesday. But a lot of times, no. And we're doing it Sunday too. Then, I mean, and then you times this by 15 years and my hangovers and withdrawal period sometimes would last 3 days. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Finally getting back to a good place on Thursday. Repeat.
Yeah, cycle. It's a cycle.
Yes. And the point like where the hangover is like the last time I drank was one of those like before I quit and officially and I tried many different times over those 15 years. There was many different times I tried to quit or to moderate or whatever. It never worked. Yeah. All right, I'm going to go to the bar. I'm just going to get two drinks. You know, no one's really out, whatever.
I'll just get one bottle. I'll get one six pack.
Yeah.
That kind of, but that's how it goes exactly. With any kind of addiction.
So that moment where I had the realization, like, it's time. This is not, I'm not going to be able to ever control it. And I'm not going to be able to do anything I want in life. It's not going. And then that was the moment. And then everything from then on out, life just upward, just went, everything was going so much better in every single aspect of my life. And then after like 2 years, I still people drink it and everything. And you still see it all the time. And I want to try to be a functioning alcoholic. I tried that. Nope. That didn't work. But then when I, after a month of trying that and feeling like shit and not being able to, you know, it was, all right, that's not working. Right back on the train of, no, we're not doing it. And it's a great feeling waking up on weekends and just you have your whole weekend to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
See the world as your playground and go have fun.
Yeah.
And you can't do it when you're drinking. You're stuck.
You're just tired. You're sweaty.
You're sweaty.
You're not present. You're just kind of dwelling.
Muscle aches. My hangovers would make my my muscles ache. And my dreams when you're going through withdrawals and you're trying just the most vivid, weird dreams that just are, you're on a different world. And then you wake up and it's just, it's an area that I am so happy that I'm not in and that I was able to make that realization. And we want to talk about this with everyone because we know so many people have it. So we want to bring light on it and show that there's light at the end of the tunnel if you're trying to quit. And we want to also, like, if anyone is trying to quit and you want to talk to us, reach out to us. Shoot us a message. Mm-hmm. I would love nothing more than to be able to help anyone who's trying to quit.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot out there that you can do and achieve.
But and a lot of people helped me that probably don't even know the impact they had.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know, those times and moments and people are really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to give back and just put it out there for people.
Yeah. That there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And I believe 100% that it is an actual entity that gets attached to people and takes hold of them.
The algal thing.
Algal or alcohol. And that's, they say, the Arabic term. The funny thing is, and I find it fascinating how far to the lengths that they're going, that they don't want people thinking that it's attached to a demon. If you look up alcohol and alcohol or algol, you're going to find, you know, four or five different articles at the front of Google that is talking about how, no, it's not. And PolitiFact and all the fact finder or fact checkers have articles that are trying to discredit that phrase. No, it didn't. It's like, well, that's not the important thing here. We know that it is a demon. And that's 100% what I believe, because I've known it and I've seen it.
And I also wanted to point out, a lot of our knowledge and wisdom about it come from personal experience. But yeah, so I wanted to point something out from Andrew Huberman. He's a Stanford University neuroscientist. He hosts his own podcast, Huberman Lab. And he had a really cool episode where he was trying to basically just dive into all of the facts around alcohol and whether or not it has any health benefits, any positive effects, obviously studying the negative effects of it, and found out that because alcohol is a substance that does permanent damage, like to your cells. And my therapist once was trying to explain this to me. I was telling you the other day how she's like, alcohol, I don't know, it somehow it's like soluble, water soluble, whatever, fat soluble, it seeps into your cells, and that's what kind of screws up the brain. It gets into the gray matter that all of your like cognitive thinking, you're remembering. And he basically explains how if you're having more than two drinks a week, it's just going to be negative effects, because after you ingest it, it turns into a poison for your body to be able to process it. And it's a really cool episode. And basically is just like, most people take it to change their inner state, but it makes you less happy. It makes you more depressed because of everything that he explains that it's doing to you. And, you know, they're a glass of wine a night, that means you're a moderate drinker. Most people are.
It's good for your heart.
Yeah.
It's good for your heart.
Yeah. And when he says it's a, yeah, and he's like, it's a legit poison. So that goes with your, with the theory of it being, you know, this, sometimes people say when you're drunk and you've got sloppy face, you're wearing the devil's grin.
Yeah.
You know?
That's, yes.
And that's what it is. And I mean, even when I was a bartender, hey, you know, you'd have your friends come in, all right, pick your poison. What'll it be?
Yeah.
You know?
And the devil's grin, when you told me that the first time, I'm like, that is so true. Because if you're talking to someone who's pretty drunk and they just got that, you know, that look, and they got that kind of smile, and it is.
And
that look, that smile, and that, what you're looking at right there, I believe, is that's the demon. That's the demon coming out. And it's, that's, it's so weird. The devil's grin.
Yeah.
It's so accurate.
It's
a good point.
Yeah.
And back to what the doctor was saying. I was always chasing, you know, they say one drink is good for a glass of wine a night for your heart. I was always chasing that three to four, that three drink buzz. When you're at three drinks, you're just at a, you're at a great, at least for me in my body, three or four drinks, I'm at just like a great buzz. I feel really good. And then the rest of the night, I'm chasing to get back to that really good feeling. But I just get drunker and drunker, and I'm not getting that same, but I want that same feeling. And then the feeling that I get after taking a shot of whiskey was like, it would like warm my belly. It felt warm, and I liked that, and it burned, and I just, I felt really good. And that's why I liked hard liquor so much. Like I would drink beer and hard, like whiskey. That warming sensation was very nice for me. And now, I've always liked coffee too, but coffee gives me that warm sensation.
Yeah.
Or hot apple cider.
Yeah, this cider's good.
That we're drinking right now, some nice apple cider. Anything warm. That's why out here in Massachusetts, half the people, well, probably more, they choose iced coffee.
Yeah, and that's a thing out here.
And it's not bad, but I like it hot. It'll be 95 degrees and I'll be like, I'll still drink hot coffee. But if it's, sometimes I'll try it out. I'll try something different. But It's something about that warm, but always chasing chasing the dragon for me. It was that three drink feeling, and I would never get it. I would never get it back. Yeah. And it's the same thing with any addiction. You're chasing, you're trying to get back. The hardest thing still for me to quit is nicotine.
Yes.
But it's something I'm not like,
it's kind of like coffee. Like I can stop drinking it, but like cigarettes, I like that buzz, and it's just, I do it out of habit, or, you know, an addiction. You just like kind of start forming this habit. Mm-hmm. It's like, when I used to drink a lot of coffee, I'm like, I'm just drinking this. It's starting to have the reverse effects.
Yeah. And my plan is to someday not smoke and get off nicotine. But it's just, for me, it's like alcohol was that's the demon. Mm-hmm. And I've cut that out. And I just, for cigarettes and for, you know, nicotine, it's just not on my top list. Like, yeah. I want to.
Yeah. No, I told you, like, a woman who worked in the industry, people I used to hang out with in Phoenix, like helping people who are just coming off of heroin, or, you know, they just checked into rehab and they would much rather have them smoking marijuana than doing heroin because it's harm reduction. Just like if you're getting sober, you can't just, oh, I have to quit cigarettes too and I should probably stop drinking caffeine. Like, you don't have to do it all at once. That's hard.
It's a process and it's a journey. And cutting out the main thing that's holding you down is the most important.
Yeah, what's the most destructive?
That's the alcohol.
Yeah.
That's the heroin. That's whatever the people's addiction is.
Mm-hmm.
Cutting that out. And then the other things like coffee, cigarettes, whatever, sweets. Well, yeah. That'll come in time.
Yeah, but you need those things. When you
have your brain and your wherewithal,
mm-hmm.
about you, you can't quit those other things too.
Well, I remember when I was first getting sober and I was in AA and people were like telling me how they ate a lot of ice cream because like your body's used to all the like sugar from alcohol, and ice cream is so comforting, and that you need to be easy on yourself, you know. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, relapsing and making mistakes was an important part of it for me. And I just remembered, like, I can, you know, get back on the wagon.
Yeah.
If I just don't listen to the little devil on my shoulder telling me to, oh, fuck it. You know, when my intuition, even if I did relapse, and the little angel comes out and is like, okay, this is not going to work.
It's okay. You'll be able to get right back on it. And you don't lose. That's one of the things that with AA would drive me crazy. You know, someone relapses, then they're starting up from day one, their sobriety. It's like, no, it's a journey. And for me, it's been 4 years. I did have a setback, a relapse where I wanted to see, but I don't take back those other 2 years of everything that I gained. No. It's been like 4 years with a setback.
Yeah.
One setback. But overall, it's like these 4 years have been the best 4 years of my life since it's been the best 4 years of my life since I was 15 years old, the first time I drank.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And that's why I want people to know, like, if you're thinking about it, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that you need to go to AA. It doesn't mean you have to do that. If you think about getting sober and it's like, well, then I would have to go to AA. It's like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
There's other methods. Mm-hmm. And if you feel confident enough in yourself, you can do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But you can talk to people about it. Like, if I didn't have a good support group, it would be so difficult. And a lot of people feel that.
Yeah.
So people that don't have that, shoot me a message.
Yeah.
This is something that I'm like full head on. Like, it's destructive for so many people. So anything that I can do, like, let's chat.
Just don't want it to ruin your life. And I mean, it could have ruined mine for sure. I'm lucky. Same. I feel lucky.
I'm so lucky with the you know, medical kind of things that can go along with it, whatever it is. Like,
it ruins your gut health. I don't care who you are.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the queen of stomach issues, but like anyone drinking in excess or like, you know, more than once or twice a week, you're going to have those issues that come along with it. And that's again, that's why it's destroying the brain, the gut biome.
Yep.
Your insides.
It is. It's slowly just killing you because you're slowly taking in this literal poison that
doesn't really taste that great.
Now, why do they call it happy hour?
Oh, God. I don't know. I don't want to know.
It's just another one of those.
Because, when I was bartending, alcohol was super cheap during happy hour, and it's right after work. Yay, now we can go be happy because we're miserable at our jobs.
Let's go to happy hour.
The American way.
But it's like, okay, well, if I'm going to happy hour, it's not just going to be for happy hour. It's going to be happy rest of my night, and tomorrow's going to suck. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Happy hour. It's so funny. Yeah, because we're all miserable. Let's go.
Happy hour was like, I can just be happy at home.
Yeah. I mean, happy hour now is, what are your appetizers? How many of those can I get? It's not. But happy hour, they're trying to draw you in. And I believe that, you know, we got the oil cabal. We have all the industrial cabals that we talk about. There's an alcohol cabal.
Yeah.
And the people who run these big, you know, Budweiser,
mm-hmm.
Anheuser-Busch, all these huge alcohol companies, these people are bad.
Yeah.
These people are bad. You know, they tried to make it illegal in Prohibition, and that is definitely not the answer. People should have the freedom to choose, and if people want to drink, go for it. But they shouldn't make that the only option. There should be, like, if someone wants some psilocybin, they want some mushrooms, they should be able to go get some. We're humans here. We have choice and free will, and they're trying to control it all. They want to control every aspect of our lives.
They want to control the way people view alcohol versus mushrooms or marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, alcohol's the worst.
And they'll say, that didn't work. Well, yeah, you don't need to make it illegal, but you can't make it the only option that people have.
And shoved in your face everywhere, like you said, it's the manipulation of the media, the television shows. Your favorite athlete he's endorsed by such and such.
Corona, find your beach, right?
Oh, yeah. That's their thing. Is that Snoop Dogg?
Well, no, it's just the Corona beer.
Yes.
Find your beach. Mm-hmm. Isn't that one of their mottos? And it's like, it's always a person sitting on the beach and they got their Corona.
Yes.
Making it like you're going to go to paradise when you drink.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're putting there in the television. In the television. It's brainwashing you to think that you're actually going to get anything from this.
Mm-hmm.
So the alcohol cabal is up there.
Yeah.
Because that's what's keeping the frequencies and the vibration of we're talking 25% of the population in the world. And that's a crazy number. Kids get started drinking young.
Mm-hmm.
We all did. A lot of people did.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare that someone's 30 and they never drank in their life that suddenly they take a drink and they become full-blown alcoholics. It's happened.
Yeah.
But it starts at a young age.
I mean, look at Hollywood. It's part of the manipulation
process. Well, going back to when we were kids and movies like American Pie and these stupid ass movies.
They were all like that, I feel like.
Binge drinking. And they're in high school binge drinking. Mm-hmm. So what are all the high schoolers around the country going to want to do now?
Mm-hmm.
Binge drink.
Yep.
Hollywood, shame. Shame on that corrupt elitist piece of garbage.
I know.
Institution and all the everyone involved in it.
Yeah.
Shame on all of them for lying, for not speaking out against corruption. They're just controlled assets. That's all they are.
I know.
And that's what everyone needs to wake up to. Mm-hmm. Is that they are not anyone to look up to.
Mm-mm.
No, they're told what to say. They're told who to endorse.
Sad.
They're just a big old group of corrupt. They're the worst. Back to American Pie and what they're all in school and they're high schoolers and they're binge drinking.
Mm-hmm.
That's that vision that they want. That's what they want to get into your brain at a young age.
Yes. And that goes along with my theory. We had DARE, drugs against resistance education, and the officers would come in and teach you about crack and cocaine, and we'd even like have to like write out these little poems like, I'm not gonna blah blah blah. I remember it being just over time discovered that that's their introduction to drugs and alcohol. Hey kids, this is what it is and this is what it does. Like, we were sixth graders, and one of my friends who had an older brother, like, who he was just a kid who started smoking cigarettes at a young age and joked around about it the whole time. Just like, what would you say if someone offered you a beer? He was like, I'd say, okay. And they were laughing. And it's like, I mean, it is a joke. That whole thing is a joke. And then the Nancy Reagan, the whole war on drugs things back in 1970, you know, it's this law getting passed and we have to educate everybody. And they create a fear around this thing so they can steer you in the direction that they want. All of the politicians like Reagan and Bill Clinton are involved with drugs and
Bush.
Yeah. So that just pisses me off. Yeah. When I came to that realization, it's like, God, they just, here's your introduction to it.
The charade.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go educate the kids at a really young age. I was in fifth grade when we did DARE. Get it into their brains what it does and that it, it makes people feel really good.
Yeah.
And they really like it and they get, well, they get addicted to it.
Yeah, that was in one of my like social science classes. That was a topic in high school. And of course, high school kids are going to giggle. And our teacher was like telling us like, that's why this and this, that's why food tastes better when you are... Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God.
You just become a couch potato and food tastes great and movies are crazy. Don't do it. The charade of weed. Legalize it at a federal level.
Well, they wanted to, it's down in Mexico and it's coming up from, it's like they want to create a narrative around it and a judgment around it. And it is mind altering. So it's not like, you know, you don't want it getting in the hands of kids, especially when they're not fully developed.
When you're 19, people should then have the choice if they want to go buy weed. They can go, should go, be able to go buy weed. If they want to go buy alcohol, they should be able to go buy alcohol. If they want to go buy some psilocybin, they should be able to go buy some psilocybin at 19. That's what I think, because it used to be 18, but like still kids are 18 in high school. 19 is like when you're out, you're in college or you're working.
Mm-hmm.
You can go fight in wars. You can be drafted to go fight in a war.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me that they change the age to 21. Then they go to college and then they can just give a bunch of MIPs and bust kids and get money out of it.
I think so.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Keeping you trapped in the system.
We felt that it was important to talk about alcoholism. Talk about the demon that's associated with it and that it affects so many people in this country and in this world. And it's important to shed light on it.
It causes so much destruction and it's just nice to talk about it and give you a point of view that maybe you haven't seen it from before.
Right.
That will open you up to thinking, oh yeah, it is kind of like that.
This is coming from two people who have lived through it. Fought it.
Failed.
Tried to control it. Yeah, we failed. And this is an open door for anyone who has issues. Shoot me a message. Let's chat.
Yeah.
Let's get that demon off your back. Because if there's something I despise just as much as the corruption that we're going after and these elitist psychopaths, it's the demon, Al Gull.
And there's light on the other side.
There is light. There's so much light.
And it's a lot better. You're not missing out. You get the keys to the things that you wanted to do and you wanted to be open to.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode. To stay on top of everything we're doing, from news updates, new episodes, and new merch drops, follow us on X, Rumble, and YouTube by searching It Can't Be a Joke.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and comment on your preferred streaming platform and check out our merch shop in the show notes below. We are always open to hearing your ideas on how we can make the world a better place and bring down this elitist cabal trying to control every aspect of our lives. Despite the forces we are up against, band together and don't stop looking up.